There's an article in USA Today, September 13th, 2011. It was a Tuesday. The article's title was called "More Americans Tailoring Religion to Fit Their Needs." The article says a number of things. One thing it says, that new research indicates that one day 310 million people might have 310 million religions. It further states that people are making up God as they go. That was a quote from the article. People are making up in America God as they go. The day before, in the New York Times, one of their columnists was commenting on some recent studies done on American youth, and some of those studies were released in a book called Lost in Transition. The result of that, in a nutshell, was that many youth, if not the majority of youth, have a almost complete inability to think about moral issues. It's a very interesting result of this study, one of the largest studies done on American youth ever. They have an almost complete inability to think and talk about moral issues. After rape and murder, and by and large, they did agree that rape and murder was wrong. But after rape and murder, most of American youth couldn't think of a moral issue. That was it. It was just rape and murder that were wrong morally. After that, nothing. They couldn't even think of something that would fall into the moral category, something that would be immoral. Their default position was this: moral choices are just a matter of individual taste. It's personal, many of the respondents said. It's up to the individual. Who am I to say? Another typical response: I would do what I thought made me happy or how I felt. I have no other way of knowing what to do but how I internally feel. Again, one of the typical responses from this huge study of American youth. When you put those two articles together, and again, those took place one day after another, one in the New York Times, the next in the USA Today, you see the religious context of our society, of our culture. This morning we're going to start, and we won't finish today, but probably next Sunday, we're going to start today by seeing that these two articles, as well as what we see ourselves and experience ourselves and read in magazines like these and papers like these, is that we have moved as a country from an Acts chapter 2 context to an Acts chapter 17 context. Or as Dorothy said when she woke up, we're not in Kansas anymore. We're not in Kansas anymore. So what do I mean about the context of Acts chapter 2? I know everybody in here have heard many lessons and has studied Acts chapter 2 a great deal. So what's the cultural context religiously of Acts chapter 2? Well, very basically, we remember what is happening at Pentecost, right? Peter and the other apostles, of course, they stand up before this immense crowd of thousands and thousands of Jews. That's who are there. Jewish multitudes. They have came to Jerusalem from all over that part of the world to come to that feast of Pentecost, to celebrate that feast of Pentecost, to observe it. What did those people believe, though? What did the people believe that Peter and the apostles were addressing? They believed, first of all, that Jehovah was the only God. The God of the Bible was the only God. There were no other gods. They all believed that. Everybody Peter was talking to believed that. They believed that the scriptures they had, what we call the Old Testament scriptures today, but they believed that those scriptures were inspired from God and they came from God through inspired people. Everybody believed that Peter was talking to. They believed in the creation account. They believed in Adam and Eve. And they believed in the fulfillment of prophecy, especially the prophecy about the coming of the Messiah. Now imagine getting to address tens if not 100,000 people who all believed that. Every one of them believed that already. That was the context of Acts chapter 2 religiously. Well, what's the context of Acts chapter 17? Paul, of course, has been on his missionary journey, one of them. He comes to Athens. He's in Athens. Climbs to the top of Mars Hill. What does he do? He addresses philosophers. He addresses people who lived in that city who believed that truth was relative. That nobody in that city, none of those idols or people who followed those idols, none of them had truth. It was all relative, just depending on which of those gods you wanted to observe. He's in this city and he's amongst a religious landscape of idols. Idols, idols, idols everywhere. Every type of religion imaginable. One commentator described it as the average person in Athens wouldn't have known Abraham from an apricot. And that's very true. That was the religious context. That was the cultural context that Paul was in. That's the people he had to address. Paul realized what? He wasn't in Jerusalem. The crowd Peter addressed was not the crowd in Athens. Matter of fact, they had practically nothing in common. They were worlds apart. And today we find ourselves in Acts chapter 17. You and I live in a world today that is not Acts chapter 2. Matter of fact, it's hardly anything like Acts chapter 2. Our world today is very, very similar. Right here in southwest Missouri, it's nothing like it was 50 years ago when I was sitting in those pews. Nothing at all, religiously speaking. It's vastly different. You can tell that by just driving through Granby, driving through Neosho, driving out in the country. You can tell that the religious landscape, the cultural landscape, has drastically changed in the past 50 years. We're in Athens now. We're on Mars Hill now. We have left Jerusalem. We are no longer there. Will we ever be back in Jerusalem? I have no idea because I'm not a prophet, but we're not there now. So what does that mean? That means many people in our country today don't believe in the God of the Bible. They're like the people in Athens. Not only do they not believe in Him, they don't even have any idea who He is. Most people you talk to today have no idea who Jehovah is. Not a clue. All across America, no idea who He is. They certainly don't believe that the Bible is inspired. They think it's just another book like any other book. They believe it's irrelevant for most people. It doesn't have any bearing on their lives. It's not even accurate in a lot of places. That's the majority of the people we know. And probably a majority of the people even here in this town. They certainly don't believe in heaven and hell. Many don't even believe that a person has an eternal spirit. They don't even believe that. That's crazy. So we can learn a great deal by seeing the difference between how Peter approached the people in Acts chapter 2 and how Paul approaches the people in Acts chapter 17. We can learn a tremendous amount about their methods. What they talked about, what they didn't talk about. What they did and what they didn't do. And we'll see how very important that is for us today in the world we live in. And what we must do, to use a phrase I think that David used in class this morning, how we must engage our culture and society. Because it's different than how we engaged them 50 years ago. Yes, we use the same Bible and we use the same truth that's in the Bible, But just like Peter and Paul, we have to approach them very, very differently. The first thing I want us to notice, and all we'll get talked about today, is number one, the attitude that we must have when we approach our culture. Open your Bibles, please, to Acts chapter 17. Acts 17. That's going to be our context for this morning and next Sunday morning as well. Acts chapter 17. Like always, we need to study what happens right before our text. Well, our text actually starts in verse 16 when Paul's in Athens. But notice what happens in the first part of Acts chapter 17. Paul's on this missionary journey. He goes to Thessalonica. Then he goes to Berea. What happens in both places? Paul is preaching the Bible. He's preaching the Word of God. What happens? People get very upset. He basically has to run for his life from both cities. They're either going to throw him in jail, or they're going to try and hurt him or kill him or something. So he has to get out of both towns fast. Now think about that. Think about if you were Paul. You've been preaching in Thessalonica, you've been preaching in Berea, people get mad at what you say. Then you find yourself in the next town, Athens. What might you want to do? Nothing. Just be quiet. That's not what he does. He finds himself in one of the greatest cultural cities of the first century, the city of Athens. It's a place that is filled with art. It's a beautiful city. The statues that they've made to all these different gods are ones that have taken a long time to make. They're beautiful. Athens is filled with magnificent temples to various gods. So Paul is in this city. Again, that's a beautiful city. It's a cultured city. And that's where he is. He finds himself in that city. And these statues, these idols, whatever we may want to call them, one person described it as being in a forest of idols. You look to the right, you look to the left, you look up, you look down, you look everywhere, all around you, what do you see? Idols. Idols, idols, everywhere. That's where he is. But Paul doesn't see that. Paul doesn't see how beautiful the idols are. Paul doesn't see how magnificent the temples are. No. Paul doesn't see that. What does Paul see instead? It says, verse 16, "Now while Paul waited for them at Athens, his spirit was provoked within him when he saw that the city was given over to idols." His spirit is provoked. One of the translations says he was greatly distressed. Paul doesn't see that as a beautiful city of art. He sees it as a city that's in desperate shape. It causes him anxiety. He's distressed at it. Because what he sees is a city filled with religious error. Here and there, everywhere, people are picking religions, but picking wrong ones, picking false religions. And so it upsets him. See how similar that is to us today? Think back about those two articles that were written less than a year ago. That's what Americans are doing. They are picking a religion, which basically means you're making your own. When you pick a religion, that's what you're doing. You're making your own. Maybe you like this from this religion and that from that religion. And then you want to add this. So you're making your own religion. Well, the people in Athens had every type of religion imaginable. And it provoked Paul. He was distressed. He was anxious. He was upset when he saw that landscape. You know, we have to open our eyes to the world we live in. I would love for everybody I know that I meet to believe in the God of the Bible and that He's the only God. that believe Jesus Christ is the Son of God and that He's the only way to heaven, and believe that there's only one church. But the vast majority of people we know do not believe that. They don't. They don't believe any of those things. I wish they did, but they don't. And wishing doesn't change anything. So I have to accept the fact that they don't and work with that. That's what Paul is doing. So he's distressed. We can't stick our heads in the sand. You know, the landscape we see today religiously should distress us as well. It should. It should distress us. It should provoke our spirit, just like Paul's was provoked. When we see what we see, especially in America, when we see that landscape. So why is Paul distressed? Because he looks out and sees that the city was given over to idols. When he sees all these idols, these row after row after row of idols, he says the glory and the worship that people are giving those idols is supposed to go to Jehovah. No wonder he's distressed. And every time today we see somebody following Islam or following Judaism or following Buddhism or following some denomination, doesn't make any difference. That's exactly what they're doing as the people in Athens. They are giving worship and they're giving their service and they're giving their submission to a false god. And Paul's provoked. He says, why are you worshiping something that's not true? If there's one thing the New Testament teaches, and that is that there is one God, there's one Christ, there's one Jesus, there's one faith, there's one body, there's one baptism. But yet the vast majority of Americans do not believe that. They don't believe any of that at all. So no wonder Paul was distressed, because people were worshiping things they shouldn't. And think about in today in America, people will worship almost anything imaginable except Jehovah. They'll go out of their way to believe something that is totally ridiculous, completely off the wall, rather than believe in the God of the Bible. And there is so much evidence that there's only one God and that He's the God of the Bible, and that the Bible's inspired. And we've had those lessons in here. There's ample evidence for people to believe that. So therefore they choose not to. And it is their choice. That's what they're choosing to believe. So people in America are just like those people in Athens. They are believing anything except what they should be believing in. So what does Paul do? Paul could have just gave up. I might have. If I found myself in Athens, I'd been ran out of Thessalonica, I'd been ran out of Berea because I was preaching the truth. I find myself in Athens where there are just hundreds or thousands of religions and all these idols. And Paul might have said, this is overwhelming. I'm just going to give up. I'm not going to say anything. He could have done that. But that's not what he did. What did he do? He started looking for opportunity to tell the people the truth. To tell them about the real God, because he knew none of these people in Athens knew the real God. Knew Jehovah. None of them did. So instead of burying his head in the sand, instead of giving up, instead of just closing the door, he says, I'm going to look for opportunities. Maybe a few people will come to believe in the God of the Bible, in Jehovah. So that's what he starts to do. First of all, verse 17. Therefore he reasoned in the synagogue with the Jews and with the Gentile worshipers, and in the marketplace daily with those who happened to be there. Athens at that time did have a small number of Jews. Not very many. He went there. But mainly, where did he go every day? To the marketplace. This was the center of all the public and civic life was the marketplace. This was the most likely place to find as many people as possible. Paul said, I'm going to go there. Again, maybe somebody will listen. Maybe somebody will. Because none of those people knew who Jehovah really was. So he says, that's what I'm going to do. And Paul said, I've got to tell them about Jehovah before I tell them about Jesus. And that's the way it is with us today. We have to tell people about Jehovah before we tell them about Jesus because most people don't know about Jehovah. And they could care less about Jesus until they know about Jehovah. So we must tell them about who God is before we tell them about who Jesus is. Since most people don't know, telling them about Jesus is a complete waste of time. Paul knew not to start there. Peter could start there. Why? Because all those people believed in Jehovah. They believed in the Scriptures. They believed in miracles. They believed in prophecy. None of the people in Athens believed any of those things. So Paul could not start at the same place Peter did because it would have been a total waste of his time. So he started where he had to start. These people were worshiping false gods. He says, I'm going to go right in the midst of them, and I'm going to start telling them who Jehovah is. So notice what he did. He reasoned with them. He reasoned with them. This is something our culture doesn't believe. Our culture says you have reason on one hand, you have faith on the other hand, and under no circumstances do those ever meet. And what did Paul do? Just the opposite. He started telling them how reasonable believing in God was. See, a vast number of people in our culture today does not believe or do not believe that believing in Jehovah is reasonable. They think it's a folk tale, or they think it's something that backwoods people believe in. You know, intellectual people do not believe in God. That's the kind of people that were in Athens. So Paul had to tell them and reason with them and show them who this God was and why they should believe in Him. And until they did that, nothing else mattered. He couldn't talk to them about anything else until first he had to tell them and try to prove to them, explain to them, help them understand who Jehovah was. That's what he does. Because he knew he had to. He couldn't do anything else. So reason and faith, and we must convince people that reason and faith are compatible. They go hand in hand. They don't contradict one another. And that is something that's absolutely essential in our culture today. Paul talked to two different types of philosophers that are mentioned. It says in verse 18, then certain Epicurean and Stoic philosophers encountered him, and some said, what does this babbler want to say? Others said, he seems to be a proclaimer of foreign gods because he preached to them Jesus and the resurrection. What did they do? They mocked him. They said, this guy's a babbler. The background to the phrase means he's a seed picker. Like what Paul was really doing, he had learned some religion, and so he took one little seed from that religion, he took another seed from another religion, another seed from another religion, put them all together, and basically didn't know what he's talking about. That's what some said Paul was doing. So they began to mock him. People are going to mock us, and if you've lived long enough and you've been in the church long enough, you will have been mocked already. Maybe about your beliefs in creation, or you believe in Adam and Eve. Well, how ignorant are you to believe that? You believe that there was a flood in Noah's day, that all these animals got on the ark? Boy, you were so stupid and backward. And that list just goes on and on. So believing in the Bible today will cause people to ridicule and mock you. Because believing in those things, believing in the Bible means to many people in our culture that you are backwoods, you're ignorant, you're uninformed, and just stupid. Nobody with any intelligence would believe any of those things. That's what Paul was dealing with in Athens. The same thing. People will continue to do that. So what happened? Into this first part of the story. And they took him and brought him to the Areopagus, saying, "May we know what this new doctrine is of which you speak? For you're bringing some strange things to our ears. Therefore, we want to know what these things mean. For all the Athenians and the foreigners who were there spent their time in nothing else but either to tell or to hear some new thing." They took him to the Areopagus, the hill of Ares, the god of war, that we usually translated Mars Hill. Again, a big public place. Tell us about these things. They wanted to know if what Paul was proclaiming was something good or not. Wanted to understand and then evaluate it. Because that's what they did. This was a town filled with religion after religion after religion. So these people said, "Okay, tell us about your view. Tell us about your religion. And we'll see if it's something we want or not. Something that we believe." So that's what Paul does. Paul had to take the initiative to go to the marketplace. From the marketplace, he was taken to the Areopagus. And now from there, he starts telling them about who Jehovah really is. And that'll be the rest of the story next Sunday morning. Things have changed. We're not in Kansas anymore. Our culture, our religious background is totally different than it was 50 years ago. Just like Paul and Peter, Paul knew when he was in Athens that he wasn't in Jerusalem anymore. And we don't live in a Jerusalem context in our country right now. We live in an Athens context. Which means we have responsibilities to the people around us in helping them come to know, first of all, who the God of the Bible is. Because Hebrews 11 verse 6 says, "For without faith it's impossible to please God." So that must be the starting point. This morning, maybe the morning you have decided, you've studied, you've listened, and it's the moment you've decided to become that New Testament Christian by being immersed in water. Or maybe you are a Christian and you are in need of prayers for whatever reason. And we encourage you this morning to come as we stand and sing this song.